So we get to talk about everyone's favorite topic, divorce. What a great thing on 7:30 on a Sunday morning. What is the background? You know, for me, it's always significant and central that this question that is put to Jesus, is it permissible for a man to divorce his wife? There's always a background, always a context. The first is provided by the verse immediately before this that we have today, verse 1 of chapter 10, that tells us that Jesus continues to travel to Jerusalem, going through the region of Judea around the River Jordan. Now, when we think of the River Jordan, we think of John the Baptist. So the question, the political question that lies behind this is the question of King Herod. Now, John the Baptist had already been put to death because he had stood and opposed King Herod for allowing his wife to divorce her first husband in order to marry Herod. So it's like in the 1990s when the question was swirling around about divorce. It was always about Lady Diana and Prince Charles. It was those political public divorces that stood at the background. We know that within Judaism, it was generally accepted at this point that divorce was a reality and that divorce was certainly possible. It was a patriarchal society, so the males generally or always had to initiate the divorce. The only place that you see this in the Old Testament is in this fairly obscure passage in the book of Deuteronomy, which Jesus refers to today. So it's the first four verses of the 24th chapter of the book of Deuteronomy. There, the teaching, and it depends on how you translate it, if a man finds something objectionable, others say something that is indecent, others add the word sexually indecent. So the presumption is that there is an affair outside of the marriage and there's infidelity and that this is the grounds and the cause for the divorce. But it's not really about the divorce per se, it's about the woman. Because verses 3 and 4 go on to say that if that woman then is given this writ of divorce to free her to be able to marry somebody else, she's married a second time, and then she wants to come back to the first marriage because the second husband has died, well, the law says, no, she can't. And why? Because she would have received a dowry entering into the first marriage. But because she's been divorced, she doesn't get to keep any of that dowry. In the second marriage, if the husband has died, she will keep the second dowry. But if the first husband wants her back, he's probably just wanting to get the dowry from the second marriage. So it's about protecting the rights of the woman. Now, this grounds for divorce, this something objectionable, the rabbis were debating and discussing, what does that mean? What are the grounds for divorce? There were three basic schools of thought about this. The first is from Rabbi Shammai. Shammai is generally a hardliner. He's the most traditional, the most conservative of the rabbis in the previous generation that were influential. So Rabbi Shammai said the only grounds for divorce was if the wife had been unfaithful. That was the only case in which divorce was permissible. There was another rabbi, Rabbi Hillel. Now, Jesus generally follows the teaching of Hillel. Hillel was more liberal, more open-minded. So Hillel gives the case that if a wife should happen to spoil a dish, that was grounds for divorce. The third major school of thought was Rabbi Akiba. Now Rabbi Akiba said that all that was necessary for divorce to be possible was that a man might happen to find another woman more beautiful. Pretty rough stuff, hey? So, normally Jesus follows Hillel, this more liberal position, but not in this question. In this question, he says no. Rabbi Shammai is correct, and even goes further still in saying, well, what was at the heart originally. Let's go back to the original purpose and plan of God. Moses only allowed this. Why? Because you were so, and the Jerusalem says, unteachable. Others say you were so hard-hearted. Literally, it's saying that you were uncircumcised of your heart. In the Greek, it's the word sclerocardia. Sclerocardia. So if you're looking for a new insult to throw at somebody, sclerocardic is probably not a bad way to go. Asking, Richard, why are you being so sclerocardic? Why is your heart so hard? Why are you so closed to these new ideas? Why are you so unable to experience this mercy and what God originally is calling us into? And so Jesus takes this teaching and makes it this, it's seemingly this really hardline teaching. But what is he really saying? He's offering us this possibility, reminding us that we don't need to stay in this hard-hearted position. We don't need to remain locked in our own little world. And that's the reality that I know that in my life that I experience so often, that I get locked in this littleness of life. I get locked in this little vision. I get locked wanting to claim my own rights, my own responsibilities, thinking that I'm someone important after all, which is so much rubbish, so much garbage. The truth, of course, is we're all broken, we're all frail, we get more things wrong than perhaps we get right. Well, I know that's the case for me. We often live in this reality where we know the ideal, we know this great desire that's up here somewhere, we know that that's the vision, the way that we're meant to be living our lives. And yet, if we're honest, we know that we're not up here. We're not up living in the truth of this gift of ourselves, but somewhere down here. But the good news that we are able to live in is that in this gap is the space for God. In this gap is the room for God's grace to operate in our lives. Divorce is never a good thing. A breakdown in a relationship is never a good thing. Just of having to deal in confession and counseling sessions with particularly women, but also men who have been so deeply wounded and grieved by this experience of a relationship that breaks down. It's never obviously a good thing. And Jesus is warning us not to have to go through this trial and turmoil. But let's acknowledge also that this failure that we see around us, and I'm sure there isn't a family here that has not been touched by divorce. Let's indeed acknowledge that that gap is present in my life too. It may not be in this particular case or example of divorce and remarriage, but it's present in the woundedness and the dysfunction and the sclerocardia that is present in my own life. Let's make a commitment this week to really help and support those marriages around us. Let's particularly encourage people who have been recently married. Let's allow them to experience our kindness and our encouragement. But let's be there also in those relationships that have broken down. Let's offer a word of encouragement. Let's really pray for those brothers and sisters around us who are suffering and struggling and wounded and hurt by all of that. Let's be people who encourage one another. Let's be people who love one another in good times and in bad, not just in that marriage, but in every relationship within our local parish. Let's be people that acknowledge the sclerocardic nature of our own lives, our own hearts. And let's really cry out to God for his mercy, for his kindness and grace.